Technorama interview with Pip Ballantyne and T. Morris, Phoenix Rising.
This show is a proud member of Friends in Tech at friendsintech.com.
Good morning, folks. This is your captain speaking.
Technorama.
Remember when?
Technorama.
On this day in tech history.
Tech.
And now, the news.
Tech.
What the chuck?
Technorama.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
I've got this book with a really long title by a couple of friends of mine, and I have no idea where I should file it.
Over there, in the media corner.
Technorama.
Hold my beer and watch this.
Unfasten your seatbelts and disregard all safety rules. Here, your flight crew, Chuck and Craig.
Welcome to Technorama, the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If this is your first time listening to Technorama, thank you for joining us. If you're a returning listener, welcome back. We appreciate you giving us your time. I'm Chuck Tomasi, and with me is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
I'm excited because it's our pleasure to have two of the best known names in podcasting and publishing, and two people we're proud to call our friends for an interview. Joining us are Pip Ballantyne and T. Morris to talk about their book, Phoenix Rising, a Ministry of Peculiar Occurrences novel.
Welcome to the show, T. Welcome, Pip.
Hi.
Hi, guys.
Hey. Hey, Phoenix Rising, a Ministry of Peculiar Occurrences novel. There's a mouthful.
I know. It's a tongue twister, isn't it?
Now, this is a series.
Indeed.
First book of the series.
Tell us about it.
Well, the Ministry of Peculiar Occurrences is an organization in Queen Victoria's government, covert, designed to look into the strange, the unusual, the bizarre, the strange things that police officers cannot be relied on to deal with. And in the ministry, there is all sorts of people from all sorts of different parts of the empire, including a delightfully explosive personality of Eliza D. Braun, who's from New Zealand. She's a field agent, and she tends to fix things with explosives.
So you pretty much stayed at home with that character,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's pretty much me. Yeah.
Okay.
So it sounds like steampunk X-Files a little bit.
Yeah, it has been called that.
Quite a bit. Yeah, we've gotten steampunk X-Files. We've gotten steampunk Warehouse 13.
Steampunk The Avengers, the British version.
That's the one I always went with. I always felt like that was what was Phoenix Rising and what the ministry was all about. They were that type of clandestine organization.
If it
was
not very clandestine,
but extremely stylish, you know? And I think part of the reason why Eliza Braun was a field agent was because they could get her out of the country. In other words, so they could keep it clandestine. But yeah, I always saw them as being very much like as a steampunk version of John Steed and Emma Peel.
Now, tell us about the male character.
Yes.
Okay, so the book opens with the archivist, the guy who does all the logistics, who takes care of the facts, who catalogs all the previous cases. That's the Warehouse 13 aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
Wellington Thornhill Books. He's been kidnapped by another equally clandestine organization, but they're on the other side of the spectrum. They're known as the House of Usher. And they basically kidnap Wellington, and it's Eliza's mission to take care of the situation. I don't want to give away any spoilers, but that's what it was. She was sent to take care of the situation, but it was the way Eliza took care of the situation and her snap judgment in the field that has her demoted. They don't kick her out of the ministry, but they do demote her to be junior archivist next to Wellington, and that's where we get to see these characters interact with one another, and then finally they embark on their own under-the-table investigation, and that's where Phoenix Rising takes off.
And the investigation has to do with Eliza's former partner in some respect as well.
Yes, Eliza's partner, Harrison Thorne, who mysteriously disappeared and then was found raving on the streets of London and is now confined to Bedlam. And Eliza gets a bit bored down in the archives. And it probably would be a slightly dull book if all they did was catalog things.
That's true.
So she decides to spice things up and save the book.
It'd be like an adventure in a library.
That's right. Ooh, should we put this under 386.2 or 386.3?
A card's out of the card catalog library.
My God, woman, you're about to break the Dewey Decimal System.
They just we decided to go with another option than that. I'm sure the librarians would have enjoyed it though if we had. But so she drags Wellington off on an adventure and knife fights at opera houses and carriage chases and explosions and all sorts of fun and hijinks ensue.
Yeah, it was a blast for us to write. There's no denying it. We had an absolute ball. I do have to give a quick shout out though to the Avengers. When we were writing this, I had no idea that Pip had never seen any of the BBC Avengers. And after we were done, that was when we sat down in front of Netflix and we watched a couple of episodes back to back of the 67 season with Patrick McNee and Diana Rigg. And not only did I remember how much I enjoyed these, but I was also reminded just how much this series had an impact on me, because I saw a lot of that. I was like, yeah, there was a lot of influence from the show on Phoenix Rising. And Pip was like, yeah, I can see that. Okay, I can see that. Oh, that's definitely in our book. And, you know, and so it was really a lot of fun going back and looking at that. Now, I wouldn't call what Patrick McNee and Diana Rigg did as steampunk.
Mm-hmm. No,
But their relationship is the snarky banter.
The banter back and forth.
The sly one-liners.
Yeah.
Oh, did they have that lovely bedroom scene like you did in Chapter 9?
No, they didn't. But
I'm sure in fanfic they did.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure in Patrick McNee's mind they did. According to Diana Rigg, in an interview, Diana Rigg said something like, oh, no. No, she's too liberated. She just looks at John Steed as a companion, as a friend. Of course, in other interviews, Patrick McNee was going, oh, they're banging every night. You know?
Well, let's take a step back. Okay, we talk about you just mentioned some of the things that possibly influenced you. What? How did y'all get together to start writing this? Where did the idea come from?
This is a long and complicated story. Well, basically, T and I were talking about collaborating on a novel, and he had an idea for this mysterious ministry. And we were talking about that. Goodness me, was it coming back from
it was coming back from 2007.
Yeah.
It was coming back from DragonCon.
Yeah.
Well, before I forget, I did want to say, gentlemen, congratulations on your Parsec win. I wanted to make sure I said that. That is awesome.
Thank you very much.
Is it nearby?
Yeah, I mean, are you looking at it longingly right now, Chuck?
It has its own webcam.
I'm actually. Yeah.
It's not just me. See,
I'm stroking mine as we speak.
Oh, hey now, easy there, easy. Chuck, you're going to put the explicit tag on this. The idea actually was a book I'd started, and it was going to actually center around Dr. Sound, but then Pip came up with this. She really wanted to collaborate, mainly because she didn't want to do all the work. And
I'm not going to correct you, because that's actually what my process was.
That was the contract. I was in the contract. I don't want to do much work.
Exactly.
No, I wanted to do a podcast for pay, and I thought, well, I don't want to write a whole novel and then not be able to, you know, make any money off it. I know, I'll get T to do half the work, and I'll give him half the money. And
I get top billing though.
No, you don't. And so we started working on that, and I think we got like halfway through, and then somebody, I had it written on my blog, and this was after Geist and Spectre sold, and somebody got interested in it and was like, hey, can we have a look at that project? And we were like, yeah, sure. We better finish it.
Yeah, so then we had to rewrite, because we were originally writing it as a radio script. We then had to rewrite it in novel format, and that was the genesis of what was originally going to be called Books and Brawn, and the first one was going to be called, you know, it was going to be called Phoenix Rising, A Books and Brawn Adventure. And the publisher, Harper Voyager, really didn't like that. They said, well, we like the two characters called Books and Brawn, but we don't think it'll work.
The title's too cutesy.
Little too cutesy. And I looked at the original idea and said, well, how about a Ministry of Peculiar Occurrences novel? And they were like, ooh, we love that. So basically the book I never finished, its spinoff became the first book in the series.
So maybe we might spin off that original.
It's timey-wimey, wibbly-wobbly, you know. Yeah, we do. We need a flow chart, you know, like they have in the TARDIS. I'm sure they got a flow chart for the timey-wimey, wibbly-wobbly stuff.
Yeah.
It's a big-ass chart, yeah. But I mean, that's because that goes
tucked away in the glove box.
Exactly. Next to the sun. And the batteries for it. So anyway, and that was where this whole thing started. And I mean, I was very gun shy about collaborating with Pip because
I'm evil.
Well, no.
Yeah.
Because of what
happened.
I have
a big stick?
No. I got some scissors here though. I can but the previous writing experience I had with Lisa Lee has not ended well.
Yeah, T felt very inadequate.
You could say that. Yeah, and I say has not had not, because recently it did just end. I mean, it took 6 years for me to finally even get some sort of back and forth correspondence started up again, and it was very heartbreaking. I think it's the only word I can describe it that for some reason
I can think of a few other words.
I'm sure you could, I basically said, okay, you know what, I got to walk away from this. But at that time, I was really I was really gun shy about collaborating with anybody, and Pip twisted my arm, and I said, okay. And I think I was in the second chapter, and I thought to myself, nah, this is the right thing to do. And we've been thrilled with the response people have had to it, both the print book and the audiobook.
And the e-books.
The e-books are coming from the podcast anthology that we started up called Tales from the Archives. And that the response from that has been tremendous.
Those are fun.
It's been a blast. And I think the only thing I enjoy more than the actual tales themselves are the vignettes that I'm producing with me and Pip as books and brawn in the archives and the silliness that we get into there. I mean, I really feel like I'm stepping back to when I produced the Billabub Battings podcast. And I remember at one point Pip turned to me and said, "You're enjoying this, aren't you?" And I said, I've missed this so much.
Now, it is a steampunk setting, but you don't overdo the steampunk stuff.
Depends on how you define that.
We have plenty of gadgets.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Each gadget should have, I mean, no one wears
You don't rely on it? Without. Right.
Yeah, it's an enhancement to the setting. It's not the setting.
Well, one of our things is that no one wears goggles unless they actually have a reason to wear goggles. No one's just walking around with a pair of goggles in their hair.
Except
which can happen in the tropes. As far as the technology and the steam-powered stuff, it should be a coherent part of the world. It shouldn't sort of stick out. Books has many fun little gadgets that he creates, and I think they work rather well for the ministry.
And the other thing, too, is this is the argument of steampunk. A lot of people believe it's just an aesthetic, that there's nothing else to it. You know, what's the big deal? And yet, where I feel our steampunk is, I'm going to go out on the edge here. The reason why I feel like our steampunk is relevant is because we don't treat the technology as just this veneer. We actually use it. And to be fair, we actually went out of our way to get every trope we could think of out of the way in the first chapter.
Airships.
In the first chapter, we have airships. We have goggles. We've got big guns. We've got gadgets.
We've got
a secret society named after someone in literature. Mm-hmm. And we got it all out of the way. And then we could tell the story. But even when we were doing that, it wasn't all for yucks and giggles. We actually had a purpose for these things, and for us, that's what steampunk is. Steampunk is not just this veneer of airships and goggles. It's about technology. It's about, okay, well, let's really think about this. If technology took off, what would people do with it? And I think one of the best representations of that is the TV show of the Wild Wild West, because you got that. You saw what people would do with technology, both on the right side and the wrong side. Some of the stuff that Dr. Lovelace was coming up with in the show was pretty amazing. But that's what people do with technology. They either figure out how to benefit mankind and do better by it, or make an immense profit over their investment and develop weapons. It's one or the other. And I think that steampunk books that are out there now, some of these storytellers hit that. Some of them don't. And I don't think that if you have a character you know, looking over a difference engine while he's adjusting the goggles on his top hat, I really don't think that's steampunk. Does that character know how the difference engine works? Are they using said different engine? And what I've found fascinating in the criticism of Phoenix Rising has been how people have almost taken umbrage with us using the technology. I remember one reviewer said in a backhanded in one of their backhanded comments, they said they have more or less a glorified MP3 player in the middle of this Victorian setting. And I'm like, yeah, it's called an analytical engine.
Yeah.
If you've ever read what the analytical engine that Babbage imagined could do,
yep,
it is not that far from an 8-core Mac. I'm serious.
Yeah? Does it have AppleCare?
No, it does not have AppleCare. That's the one thing it doesn't have.
Babbage Care.
Does it run iMovie?
No, but he was playing music on it and changing the songs. And
making cups of tea.
Yep. You know, why not? And that was part of the fun, was trying to picture, okay, how do we take today's technology and put it in this setting and make it realistic? Because that was the first thing I was thinking was, and what's really terrific about playing in steampunk is when you figure out how the technology works back in the Victorian day, it then opens it up for even more fun. Like I said, okay, if we have an analytical engine, it's going to need a lot of steam, which means it needs a lot of water. Okay, we'll connect it to the Thames. Then I was like, well, then they're in the basement, which means it's dark and it's dank. So Wellington is constantly harping about...
And it's dripping.
And it's dripping.
Drip. You know? Drip. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, it just one after the other after the other. And that's the beauty of writing in this genre. Just the possibilities.
It's tough being a librarian in the basement.
It is. It is.
I mean,
powered by gaslight, yeah.
Hi, this is Dr. Pamela Gay, and you are listening to Chuck and Craig on Technorama.
Now, how did Harper Voyager let you get away with some of the names you threw in there?
I don't know.
Bruce Campbell? Really?
That was half my fault and half T's fault. Well, we were introducing an Australian character, because when you've got a New Zealand character, you've got to have an Australian character, so they can squabble. And I said, well, you know, it's an Australian character, it's got to be called Bruce, you know. And then we were trying to come up with what his second name would be, and that's when T is responsible for Campbell.
Yeah, that's how we came up with Agent Bruce Campbell. And I got to admit, every time we write for Bruce, I can always see the young, Army of Darkness Bruce Campbell with a big old jaw and being snarky as all get out. I mean, it's very easy to figure out. But I don't think our editors...
I don't know if they noticed.
I don't think they noticed. In fact...
don't tell them.
I was more surprised when we got away with Barnabas and Angelique Collins. I was like, whoa, we got away with that?
You even snuck your daughter in the story.
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. Yes, I did. And
next, we'll have my cats.
Yeah.
Yeah. You get all new characters for the next book already taken care of.
Yeah.
We'll write the characters in accents. Oh, hi.
Well, we also stuck Brendan Hill, who's a friend of ours.
Gutshot
on Twitter, who is constantly going on about his monkey knife fighting, which we don't know whether it's monkeys with knives or fighting
monkeys with knives. But the best part of that, we didn't even go as meta as PC Herring did, because for his short story, he got Brandon Hill to voice Agent Brandon Hill.
Nice.
I mean, this is the kind of goofiness that people have been coming up with. And this is also why we're enjoying this so much. The kind of steampunk that we write is very girl genius-esque. It's fun. It's meant to be fun. And I think that's part of why people read Harry Potter. That's why people want to read some fiction. They don't necessarily want to be drained emotionally. They want to have a good time. And that's why books like we're still talking about books like The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Yep.
Because they're fun. And so that's what Pip and I have gone for in this series.
All right, I've got a character question. Mm-hmm. What's with Wellington constantly hearing his, he's being haunted by his father's voice. What's up with that?
That is something that I intend to reveal in some upcoming 99 Penny Dreadfuls.
He's got a chip in his head, right?
He does not have a chip in his head. Okay. But I
his father's Kal-El.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. If I want your help, I'll deport you, okay?
I'm just asking, you know? I'm just throwing a few ideas out there.
Yeah, she's asking because she never pays attention to anything that I say whenever we're talking.
What?
Exactly. So really with Wellington's father, it's how he's brought up. And you find out more about some of his upbringing in the second book, in Of Cogs and Corsets. And you find out a few details about Wellington that we can't go into now because, you know, spoilers. So he's just haunted. His father was an extremely overbearing man, and extremely unpleasant. And there's going to be more you're going to discover about some of the shenanigans his father was up to in future volumes.
Now,
he's not crazy though. He's not crazy.
Really?
Does it get darker or?
Well, I mean,
without giving away too much.
That's something else that we got really criticized about. And
yeah, but this was the funny thing. The Phoenix Rising took a dark turn towards the end.
A very
yes,
dark.
Yes.
And there were people that were saying, well, those Hellfire Clubs, Victorians didn't do that. Yes, they did.
Yeah.
And I actually think the I'm going to use a big word here, Dee. The juxtaposition of dark and comedy has always been, you know, a staple of literature and movies and things, you know. So I enjoy that. And I think that the comedy stands out in starker contrast against the darkness. And you can still have comedy with darkness.
Oh, yeah.
It's like red wine and chocolate.
Yeah. I mean, it's the...
Yeah.
For whatever reason, people were really stunned by this dark turn that we took. And I kept thinking to myself, I don't know what they're talking about. And then I was listening to James Langton read Phoenix Rising for Harper Audio, and I remember looking at the iPod going, did I write that? Oh my God, you know. But then I realized this was what we were going for, because you do, I mean, Pip is absolutely right, you do see this in comedy. And I don't know, I was a little taken aback as to why people didn't want us to go dark, but that was the other thing that people tend to gloss over in when they look back on Victoriana, that it was all, you know, rainbows and optimism
and
prim and proper. Yeah,
exactly. It wasn't. I mean, the Hellfire Clubs, the way we depict, we were nice to the Hellfire Clubs. I mean,
and we didn't really talk about the truly terrible things that happened to children in the Victorian age.
And that's, but again, that's another bad rap that steampunk has, is that apparently it's either got to be light, fluffy and goofy, or it has to be dark, grim, and without hope.
Dystopia.
Yeah, dystopia under almost like Queen Elizabeth, under Queen Queen Victoria. And you know, and we said, well, why can't we have both? Let's have chocolate and peanut butter. Why not? You know, and that was where we went with it.
Yeah, Eliza's going to get hauled away for child labor laws now.
Exactly.
Oh, those little scamps. They got to work for their money.
Well, now that's
paying them hard enough. She's the, are you putting these children up in chimneys? No? Well, then we're taking them away from you. We have chimneys to clean.
We have
sewers to, sewers, you know, to grind.
We have sneakers that they should be making in Vietnam.
Yeah. Good Lord. Well, listen, now that the book's out, what's the reaction been like, and what have y'all been doing since? I mean, like, I know I saw y'all went to some cons and stuff, so talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, we're doing... we just got back from FenCon in Texas.
Done, that was fun.
We did WorldCon. We did Steampunk World's Fair in New Jersey. Mm-hmm. We're heading out in October to New York Comic Con.
That's a big step. Thing. Yeah, that's our big thing. That's our big thing. We also have, I believe we can talk about this now because I've been in touch with them. The League of Steam have recruited us to make an appearance at Kamikaze Con.
I thought it was Expo. Expo.
Yeah, Kamikaze Expo in L.A.
In November.
In November, yeah. We're also working on Of Cogs and Corsets right now, the sequel.
Mm-hmm.
And
Phoenix Rising got nominated for an Airship
Award.
Yeah,
that's right. Phoenix Rising got nominated for an Airship.
Very cool.
Yeah.
It's the reaction people have had has been, like I said, it's been delightfully overwhelming. Probably the coolest one was Felicia Day reviewed us on Goodreads.
Oh, very cool.
Well, she didn't realize she's already a fan of Pip's from the Spectre and Geist novels. And it wasn't until she put together Ballantine that she realized that Pip Ballantine and Philippa Ballantine were the same person. And we've already decided we're gonna track her down at New York Comic Con. We got back from Fen Con.
Oh, yes, the Science Fiction Book Club also bought the rights and produced some really nice hardcovers.
Beautiful hardcovers. So we're going to sign a hardcover and give it to Felicia with the inscription from the Eurotrash of Nerddom. Thank you for everything, and then we're just going to sign. I don't know if you've seen that or not, but
the episode of the Guild with the steampunk people.
The episode of the Guild with the steampunks. Oh my God, I have not laughed.
I don't think she's going to make it to New York.
Oh no, she's on the schedule. She's on the schedule.
Well, yeah, well, she was on the schedule to go to Titan too, but that got all sidetracked.
Knows. Well, we'll track her down. We have ways.
Find her in LA. I think
she's on the internet.
That too.
I think she might even be at Kamikaze Con.
Well, we'll figure
we'll
it
find
out.
We'll find her.
We will find her.
Let's talk about Mr. James Langton, the narrator. Yes. I listened to the Audible book. This guy did a supreme job. He must have had, 15 characters to do?
Mm-hmm. And lots of different accents.
That was the thing I'd forgotten and I didn't expect. There's this one scene where Bruce Campbell is down in the archives and he's reading a previous case that takes place in Cape Colony. And I was stunned when Langton suddenly switched.
He started
to do South African. I was like, whoa. And as much, we have received some emails where people are like, well, we were expecting you guys to do the audiobook. We would have loved to, but at the same time, it was really neat having someone of Langton's.
Here, check out this guy's resume. Whoa,
man!
Yeah, he's done some. Yeah, actually, we spoke to someone fan in Texas, and when we said James Langton, she was like, "Oh, him!
He does great work. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah." So yeah, I think Harper Audio did a great. And what's even better about Harper Audio, or I should say Harper Media, they not only pimped us on their Tumblr. But they also pimped the Tales from the Archives podcast without any kind of heads up from us. And I wrote back to them through Tumblr and I said, you guys know we also did a book trailer. And they were like, oh, yeah, we meant to embed that. So they went back and they embedded the trailer into the Harper Media Tumblr. So you can see it there. And, the amount of support we've been getting because it was Harper Collins that arranged for us to be at Comic-Con. So, that's just been great. And, they've been terrific in working with us and helping get the word out about the book. And overall, I think the reaction to the book has been positive. I mean, you're not going to please everybody. When you write a book, you're just not going to please everybody.
Even that Tolkien guy had some detractors.
I'm sure he did.
Yeah. Dream shattered.
Yes. But yeah, I mean, it's been a great ride and when people say we're looking forward to Of Cogs and Corsets, that's when
when is Cogs and Corsets?
That was my next question.
Probably this time next year, I would say. Thenabouts.
In fact, at the time of this recording, we are in final edits. I'm sorry, final edits for this round.
Yeah,
for this round.
Hopefully, it'll be comment edits, light editing, and then
yeah, exactly,
and then line editing.
And whether it'll be out in time for Dragon Con next year, I don't know. But we do know it's coming in 2012. We know it's going to probably be late summer, early fall. And we're just.
But in the meantime, of course, we are still going to be writing stories.
Oh yes, yeah. We're
going to keep putting out the 99 Penny Dreadfuls. In fact, I'm putting together ideas for a exclusive 99 Penny Dreadful that will cover. The Ministry 7 before Eliza arrived on the scene, and we'll get to meet the person who was in charge of them before.
Right.
And
the idea is that we're taking the
YA spinoff.
Yeah, we're taking the 99 Penny Dreadfuls, and in between seasons of Tales from the Archives, Pip and I will write maybe one or two a month, where it's just a 99 cent short story, I'm not quitting my day job anytime soon, but the reaction from the short stories has been also very promising. It's I feel like I'm choking on my words on this, but I think the age of the ebook is finally it's at least beginning. It's beginning, and I'm more impressed with the process of ebooks than I am with Amazon's Amazon's what are they called? The Fire. Yeah, you know. Okay, they made a Color Nook. Yay! But I do think
another avenue, though. I mean, you know,
it is. It's another avenue.
I actually think the two new versions that they've got that are going to be like $79 and $99. Are actually more important to the market than the Fire is, because the Fire is great for those who want to hack and get the Android, you know, basically turn it into
iPad. Their own tablet. Yeah.
But for Joe Average, something that's cheaper than $100 that he can buy and read lots and lots of books on, I think it's a psychological barrier.
I
don't know. That thing is only $200. That's a pretty low barrier to
entry. Yeah, but I mean, for people who just want to read ebooks, just want to access books, something that's cheaper than $100 is attractive.
Yeah, plus, sure. I mean, think about it. When you put the Color Nook and the Fire side by side, the Color Nook, first off, one thing that the Color Nook has that the Fire currently does not have is it's got chops. It's got street cred. I mean, people have been using the Color Nook. And I think that for people to be jumping so quickly onto the Fire, I'm like, you know,
jumping into the fire,
yeah. Part of the fun.
From the fire.
I mean, when you think about it, the people who are telling us that the Amazon Fire is really cool are the people from Amazon. And I mean, if it breaks on them, they can just, you know, go somewhere in their building and say, hey, fix it, and then they get a new one. I would like to say, wait a month till after it's come out, then let's see what people are talking about. Because even then, the iPads were popular, but they really didn't start taking off till people started talking about them in that first month. I remember, and it was pretty impressive.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know, and for myself, I know I've got my eye on a Nook Easy Reader, which is their tiny pocket one.
And yeah, boy, that looks cool.
Looks very snap.
Speaking of color, who did the cover art for your book?
Oh,
that's one of the in-house art directors at HarperCollins.
I can't remember right off the top of my head.
It's actually a photo that they've messed around with and digitized.
And it was, it's funny. We look back on Pip's covers with Ace, and then we look at the Ministry cover. We're waiting to see what they come up with on Cogs and Corsets.
Even on the
and then the one that that Pyre Books is doing for you. So far, Pip has had terrific
cover foo.
Yeah, she's got great cover foo. Whatever rabbit foot she rubs right before the artist shows up. I mean, it's working. So you know, we're very pleased with it.
Well, yes, Jason Chan. Won the Chesley Award.
Yeah.
I got to pick up an award. It wasn't mine. I had to pick back.
Oh, and it's a pretty award too.
It was pretty heavy.
Wait, weighed a ton. I think part of the luggage fee we had to pay was just for the award.
Got to pay carry on for this thing.
Yeah, I know.
Hi, this is P.G. Holyfield, author of Murder at Avedon Hill, and run the Game of Thrones podcast called Beyond the Wall, and you can find that at specficmedia.com, and you are listening to Technorama.
Hey, one of the things that I wanted to ask you about was you did the book trailer, and we kind of mentioned that earlier, and I thought it was really well done. Can you tell us a little bit about that? Tell everybody kind of how that came about and who did it.
Guerrilla style.
Yeah, we were pretty much doing guerrilla style filming because we didn't know who we needed to talk to film on property. So we
just didn't talk to anyone.
We didn't talk to anybody. We basically
asked for forgiveness type thing.
Yeah,
well,
we were
on a public street. We were on a street.
And that was
the thing. We were entitled to be filming. I think we were right filming inside the... We were inside a Masonic, an old Masonic temple. Was the interior shots?
And they were using the Masonic temple for public events and for people to rent out this one room and you know little things
we
like
had
that.
Contacts.
So we had contacts, and we shot the whole thing in one day in Stanton, Virginia. And what people don't realize about Stanton, and we actually were doing, we came up with the idea when I took Pip out to Stanton for a little bed and breakfast getaway. And we're walking around Stanton and we were stunned at the amount of Victorian
architecture
and Edwardian architecture that was still standing. I mean, the churches, and then the one facade you see where we're running slightly uphill in front of a large building. That's a SunTrust bank.
That's funny.
We just had to. All we had to do was crop out the SunTrust sign, and we were good. And it was really astounding. The stuff that our cinematographer
that somebody suggested that we'd done it in green screen.
Yeah. People refused to believe.
No, we did run up those. Well, you did run up those streets.
Yeah, I ran up
the hill.
You know, we basically ran around in the streets. We ran on sidewalks, and then the rest. You know, I came in here and I chopped the whole thing up in Final Cut.
We also had the help from Christopher Nolan.
Yeah, and that was through our
and the Coen brothers and
no, really. Our cinematographer, he was an amateur cinematographer. His name is Link Williams, and he lives a couple doors down from me. And we were Sonic Boom is best friends with his daughter Bionic Girl. And the two of them are
forces, and they're going to battle.
Yes,
evil.
They are. But anyway, I was getting frustrated because this one contact was supposed to get us all this equipment, and everything was falling apart. And Bionic Girl's mom, Jennifer, said, "T, you realize that Link used to shoot films with Christopher Nolan before he was big, right?" And I kind of looked at her and I said, "I thought you were just pulling my leg." She was like, "No, he's really worked with Christopher Nolan." So I contacted Link, and Link said, you know, with less than 2 days, he said, "Yeah, I'd love to do this."
Next thing you know, he's pulling apart an office chair and
turning it into a dolly.
It wasn't his office chair.
No, it wasn't his office chair. It was somebody else's.
My chair.
He took a barbell.
That's dedication. Tear up your chair.
Well, somebody else's chair.
He took a barbell set, turned that into a Steadicam. I mean, he was pulling
he
all
He was MacGyvering the heck out of it.
And he pulled all this stuff off of YouTube, all these how-to videos on how to make your own Steadicam, how to make your own dolly, how to make a crane. Now, he didn't go that far, but he's already planning for the next book trailer. But there is one story that I like to tell where it was my proof that God truly does exist, because we're shooting in this Masonic temple. It's a beautiful this old Masonic
in
building
the stairwell,
and we're shooting in a stairwell. So the stairwell, it's also, you know, all this antique. We wound up not even using the shot. That was heartbreaking. But to get the ambient noise of us running up the steps, I took my H4N, put it on the monkey grip, and pointed it straight down.
And it was attached to the handrail.
Yeah, it was attached to the handrail. So we're getting ready to shoot, and suddenly I hear Link go, "Heads up." And I see the H4N fly by me. Now, it wasn't the fact that this H4N was taking a 5-story plummet straight down the stairwell. What was terrifying was that under where I positioned this, directly beneath the H4N was an antique mirror that was well over 125 years old.
Oh no!
And what had happened was at just as it started to fall, it caught the 4th-story landing, knocked out of the way of the mirror, but I couldn't see it. So I couldn't see anything falling, and I was looking around going, "God, please don't hit the mirror. Don't hit the mirror."
You would have heard it if it hit the mirror.
Yeah, you would have heard it. And
we were prepared to run.
Yeah, we were just like, I actually heard somebody say, "Get ready to run."
Yeah, right.
And then we heard it burst. We just heard this H4N just bam, right into the floor, and just the floor. And I remember, you know, letting out a sigh of relief. The good news was we didn't need any like high tech audio that day, so I was fine. But yeah, if anyone ever says, you know, "Do you believe in God?" I go, "Yes, I do," because he cut me a break that day.
When I don't know, couldn't he have made the H4N bounce?
That would be
or
asking.
Survive?
That would have been asking far too much.
One miracle a day is fine with me.
Thank you. Testify, my brother. Testify.
Yeah, rubber spontaneously appears around it and saved it.
Spinny Hill walks past with a rubber mat.
Yeah.
And accidentally it bounces off it.
I heard no saxophones, so unfortunately no.
That would have been awesome.
That would have been awesome. But the thing about book trailers are either very, very good or they are painful to watch. And I was really,
anything cranking. How many, like a minute, 2 minutes?
Ours was 2 minutes long.
Yeah.
Ours was 2 minutes long.
I think that's starting to get a little.
But it went by fast. But I've seen some book trailers that have been 5.5 minutes long. And it's all titles. And it's all pictures. And that's it.
My best one is somebody had taken them from iStock. And they hadn't even bothered to take the watermark out. In other words, they hadn't even paid.
Oh.
They didn't.
I was like, yeah. Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
You just marked yourself as a real cheapskate. You're going to
get those pictures off iStock for like $1.
Yeah, I know.
And she was using the samples. She was like, oh, don't worry, I give them credit. And it said photos courtesy of iStock.
I don't think courtesy was probably what iStock would say.
No. are you okay, Craig? Is the photographer in you now curled up in the fetal position or anything like that?
Yeah, see, I would be willing to take pictures for something like that. You know, just out of the kindness of my heart, just to have fun with it.
Well, that's the other thing that you'll get a kick out of too, is that the we had 3 video cameras, but I would say all of the footage for the trailer that we used wound up coming from an SLR camera.
Oh, yeah.
The footage is just gorgeous. I mean, you think it looks good online. We have the HD version, and we watch it on the widescreen TV here, and it's just purdy. It is just purdy. And
the light shining off the leather book.
Yeah, it really was. It was also a real education, because I wanted to make a trailer that was entertaining, that wasn't one of the bad ones. And I think what some authors forget is that if you want a good book trailer, you got to shoot it, and you got to treat it just like you would a movie trailer.
Mm. Absolutely.
And you know, you either have dialogue and scenes.
I think authors forget the trailer part of it, and they concentrate on the book.
Yeah.
But I don't want to. I can't stand the book trailers where they've got the lines and the dreary music, and I'm like, I'm asleep. Like 30 exactly. seconds into this, why am I ever going to buy your book?
I mean, we haven't had like the uber astronomical numbers, but I have seen some. Very well done trailers, and they broke maybe 1,000, 2,000 views, and we've got over 4,000 views the last time I checked.
Sweet.
And yeah, I remember that when we first put it out there, people were really pushing it on Facebook and really sharing it and embedding it, you know, and that type of support, particularly through the social media channels, meant a lot to me and meant a lot to Pip. And we're glad we did that. We just have to figure out, okay, if we're going to do this again, how do we top it?
Maybe be a little bit more organized and not
just a wee bit.
Not say like 3 days before, hey, do we need someone to help us film this?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, maybe we should think about this.
Good news is that after we did this, Link got so wrapped up
in filmmaking,
he's doing it again. And
he's already going, where are we making the next one, right?
Yeah, we're making the next one, right?
The awesome. First one's free.
He wants to shoot a steampunk short film now. And I'm like, oh, Link, come on, pull it back, bro.
Well, I have to say that we are thinking about going to the New Jersey Steampunk World's Fair.
And if we can find a really nice, rustic, Victorian location somewhere, that would
I
be
can
great.
Think of a couple.
Yeah, be great.
Take Link with us; he'd love it.
Yeah, he would.
Road trip.
Oh, it's been a whole lot of fun.
Well, thanks a lot. Thanks a lot, Chuck, for listening to the book, Chuck. I mean, we appreciate Chuck your support. You too, Craig.
I appreciate Chuck too.
No, really.
I'm sure Craig's gonna get around to that.
Yeah, he'd better.
There's a great segue. Tell Craig where he can find all this information.
Very nice.
Well, all things Ministry of Peculiar Occurrences can be found at ministryofpeculiaroccurrences.com. So you can find the podcasts.
Come on.
How do you spell peculiar?
You just interrupted my flow.
I'm just saying. Look. Tomasi and Step are parsec winners now. They got to up their game. I was waiting for the bell. Bell wasn't there. So I got to cover for these guys again. Oh, no. So.
Yeah, Foghorn.
Okay. Ministry of Peculiar. I see you've ruined it for me now. Ministry of Peculiar Occurrences.com is where the podcasts reside. You can find links to the short stories and the trailer is there, and also a sample of the audiobook with the dulcet tones of Mr. James Langton.
And there also there's also a sample that you can read online of the first 70 pages. Yeah, first 70 pages in there. And also the other thing where you can find out where we'll be, we just launched brand new writing podcast called The Shared Desk, and that is at
thesharedesk.com. It's basically us just shooting the breeze and, I don't know, busting each other's hump, you know.
Actually, it's you busting my hump, I think. But
nah, that's for ball busting, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, that's what that is. And yeah, that's the – oh, and you can also chit-chat with Eliza and Wellington on Twitter. You just have to at booksandbrawn on Twitter. And one of us will ping back at you. If the tweet is marked WB, that was Wellington. If it's marked EB, it's Eliza.
Do you have a short URL? Because Craig can't spell peculiar occurrences worth a crap.
Well, if you just go to pjballantine.com or tmorris.com, there are links to it.
Oh, that was slick. I have trained her well.
I can spell T. Morris.
There are many ways to spell T. Morris.
Actually, it's the homepage on my browser.
Now he's
a suck up.
Yeah. Just remember, I'm the outer spoon, and at the next create, okay, I'm the outer spoon.
And on that note,
hey baby.
Shall I leave you guys alone?
Yeah. No.
Thanks once again.
Oh my God. Where do we become unhinged?
Oh, right after welcome to the show.
You've ever been hinged?
No, that's true.
I've never noticed that.
Well, thanks for having us on the show, guys. We certainly do appreciate it.
You guys are awesome. We are looking forward to seeing you next fall. Looking forward to the new books coming out, and everybody will keep their eye on your websites to know where things are going and know when to be there.
Sounds great.
Fantastic.
That's all for this time. We appreciate you giving us your time for a listen. If you like the show, there are many ways to show your love. Call the listener line, 206-222-CHAT. That's 206-222-2428. Or email us, technorama@chuckchat.com. Or on Twitter, we're C. Tomasi Step K. Or, yes, you guessed it, Technorama. You can find all that at the website, chuckchat.com. Thanks to Mad Mar for providing all the great blog content during the week. If you're not going to the website or subscribing to the RSS feed, you should. It's a great old time. You won't miss a thing that way. Thanks to Ustream, who keeps our modest live streams going on Sunday night. If you're around on Sunday at 9:30 Eastern time, we'd love to see you there. Join the live chat room and the live webcam.
And we're live, too.
The chat room is provided by thinstack.net. We love those guys because it's free. Yeah. This show is a proud member of Friends in Tech. You can find out more at friendsintech.com. We're also affiliated with all the great podcasts over at farpointmedia.com. Go there, check them out. You're going to find something you like. I guarantee it.
All right, Justin Wilson.
Until next time, tell a friend about Technorama, and as always, a binary high five.
Ooh, 101.
That's good enough for me.